Just kidding.
I'll just leave
now. Yes. You're like the guitar player they don't have it plugged in.
As long as we can hear Bianca, I'm good.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hide that.
God.
No,
it's not, it's not right.
I've always been wrong.
Check test.
There we go.
A whole life of near misses.
All right. Hey.
What?
Let's put on a show. Wow. We're not going there.
We're ready.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, thanks for tuning in, everybody. And we are ready to go, and we have a genuine celebrity in the house.
Totally. Best celebrity ever.
Celebrity chef.
Ever.
Yeah, forget Barkley and David Spade.
What the hell with them?
I know. That's nothing.
Bianco
feeds the soul.
Chris Bianco is in the house from Pizzeria Bianco. Mm.
Best
Welcome.
Pizza in the world.
Best pizza in the world. That's right. And Mark Cordes is here.
You know what's weird, though? Barkley and Spade, they brought food, and they don't even have a restaurant.
I know, that's so...
That's kind of weird.
Well,
I'm a contrarian, though, is the obvious thing.
It was obvious, and we're starving. I got, you know, no beer. Got
no
nothing
beers tonight.
Nothing for Anheuser-Busch.
It's a dry show.
Oh, I know.
It's a dry county.
Terry Dozer.
Yeah.
We're going to start out here. We have a lot of very serious topics this week,
right.
So try to... Chris,
keep
make sure you... yeah, nothing off-color here.
Nothing
off-color. Last week's show was...
rude.
It was... You heard some comments about that, huh?
I was playing golf today with a bunch of ladies at a pro-am, and one of them said, "No country for old men."
Oh, no, let's
are
not
you
repeat
joking?
That.
I said, "You got the movie quiz."
There you go.
That was horrid.
No, she
but
said
she
that
laughed
was
really hard.
Good, okay. She liked it, actually.
She did.
Good, good, good. Okay, that's good. Well, we're going to talk with one of the preeminent legal scholars in the country. That probably sounds very boring, but it won't be. And also... It's perfect timing because Jesse Choper, who is the founding dean of the University of California at Berkeley, Bolt Law School, is also a big, big guy in the racehorse world.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, I think he's on the California Commission or something like that. He does all sorts of great stuff. But we'll talk about the Souter resignation with Jesse in just a couple minutes. And Rob is going to join us later in the show. lots of amigos, many amigos, from the Arizona Republic. And we'll talk a little bit about our friend Jack Kemp and his legacy and his effect on the Republican Party and the country in general. So we got lots of fun stuff coming up. And but to start out with, we have to talk about all the exciting things that you guys did on the weekend. Because I did nothing very exciting, except I did go, if you'll see on my Facebook page, I went to see Facebook, Twitter, make sure you follow along, folks. Uh-huh. I went to Geppetto and Son at Valley Youth Theater.
Oh, okay.
And you know what? It was very good.
Because Ava was in it?
No. It's not a thing you go because your kid's in it. You go because it was actually very good.
Oh.
They had...
As opposed to the things your kids are in?
Theirs usually aren't too good.
Okay, got it.
You know, I mean, that's the way. Your kid is always great, but the other kids generally, some of them are actually horrible. And let's face it, right? I mean, some of those little kids.
Right.
I mean, they stink, and it ruins the whole show. But, no, this was actually...
So that was your weekend.
Yeah, was that the highlight? Yeah, pretty much.
Wow. Moving on, Mark.
Geppetto and Son?
Geppetto and Son, yes.
Don't tell me how it ends. I want to. I'm gonna go see it.
Yes. Didn't you see one of those movies in your Marriott Pinocchio?
If you give me a couple of minutes, I'll come up with one.
Yeah.
Not only his nose that grows. Yeah. The whole thing. Remember that?
Yeah.
There was a movie like that.
There was like Pornocchio.
Pornocchio.
That's bad.
Something like that. Yeah.
Lie to me.
Yeah. Not good.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Not good.
Okay. Did you want to share your weekend?
Yeah. Let's hear it.
You know what I did? I wanted to get away. I went up to Pine Top Lakeside for 3 days.
Really?
Wow.
Just got.
Very nice.
We've got a little cabin up there. I am officially going to move there and become the Unicomic.
Wow.
And just sit in my little cabin, type out my comedy manifesto, mail it around the country. Don't even have to go to gigs. Just have him read the manifesto.
Now, you know,
I am possibly the best looking guy in Show.
You know what? If you go into that Walmart up there, woo, yeah, you are the best looking guy there.
That's
a rough crowd.
I could be an underwear model in Show. I'm trying to get that visual out of your head later.
Oh,
on.
Oh my God!
I can't.
We went up there one time with my son Austin Woods is here co-producing tonight, and when he was a kid, he was like 12 or something, and I went, I think, and he and his friend Lenny We went up there, and I overheard Lenny on the phone talking to his parents. We'd been up there like day and a half. And he's like, "Oh, Mom, we're having the greatest time. This is the greatest place ever. Oh, we went to the Walmart. We went bowling. We went driving around. And now we're going to do it all over again."
That's it.
Because there was nothing left.
They got the go-karts, too.
Yeah, I've never done that up there.
Oh,
doesn't look good.
You know what else is good? Right close to the Walmart now, they've opened an urban club.
What's that?
What is that?
An urban, like a hip-hop.
Oh, come on.
They don't call it the urban club,
no,
do they?
No, it's called...
maybe Keith Urban.
Something Distraction
up there. I mean, that's not... Come on.
It's urban DJ Distraction or something like that.
Really?
And yeah.
And you went in there?
No.
It used to be Mr. C's up there.
You drive by and you hear, like, hip-hop. This is about 3 months ago. And
that'll
I drove by the other
business.
Night. There's not a car in the parking lot, and there's country music blaring out of it.
Absolutely.
It's still a hip-hop
club. Yeah, there's no way.
Cowboys shot up the place.
Remember, you ever go to Mr. C's up there back in the old days? Yeah, not good. It was like a disco deal. It's changed hands about 20 times now. And there's not a lot going on up there, but it's nice up there.
That's what I like about it, though.
Yeah. You just get away.
You know, 25 degrees cooler.
And one time, I'll tell you one story there. I was leaving there late. I think I was skiing up in Sunrise or something. And it was myself. And it was like two couples, okay? So back when I was in law school. And the other guy was my friend, Kent Comedina, right?
Oh.
So remember Funky?
Funky,
okay,
yes.
Yeah. So we had a basketball game at 6 p.m. In Tempe. And it was like a big game. We were, we had to be there for it. So, of course, we screw around. We ski too long. And we had like 3 hours and 15 minutes on the money to get there at 6.
Not going to happen.
Okay, that's tough because that's about as fast as you can drive that, right? In those days, anyway. You had to go through the canyon and all that. So we had the most harrowing drive. I drove through the canyon. I mean, we were passing people. It was horrible. Mm-hmm. Everyone is just exhausted, nerves on end. And we roar up to Tempe High School, and it is like 1 minute till 6. And if you're late, they'll forfeit you. So we run in there, and that ref is a real jackass, and he's like, blows the whistle as we're walking in. And, we'd changed a little bit in the car, but we had to put on a jersey, so we throw on these stupid jerseys, and we walk out there. And we had to be there because we were the fourth and fifth guy. We had no extra guys, right? So we walk out there. He throws up the ball for the jump ball. We start running down the court. Technical foul. Funky had it on wrong side out or something.
Oh, no.
Some bullshit with the jersey, right? No, so that's a technical, right? And we're like, are you fucking kidding me? Boop! Another T, you're gone. Oh, sorry, not enough players. Forfeit.
Oh, my God.
That's terrible.
Yeah. At 6:10, we were walking out into the parking lot. We had this god-awful, harrowing ride.
After a Rockford file drive.
Yes. Got there at 1 till 6. At 6:10, we were going home. Like,
thanks, that was fun.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Double
nice
T right off the bat in the first minute. Oh, their episode was late, jackass.
And Robert Ory came out and knocked you down.
Yes.
It was another game.
It was not pretty. So,
all right, Chris, you made some pizzas over the weekend, no doubt.
I did. It was a very glamorous life I had, making pizza and... at a dizzying pace.
It is glamorous. How about this? 9-page spread on Mr. Bianco here in Martha Stewart Living this month. If you go to the stands out there, a 9-page spread. And
that's when you know times are...
That's fantastic.
News is lean right now.
And that's like one
not.
Of a thousand of
He's in
of
Food and
things.
Wine magazine. Oh, yeah. He's in GQ. Our other producer, Seth Sulka, has read none of those, but he's hoping that Chris will be featured in Maxim, and then he'll be able to read it.
That's true.
That's the magazine he gets at home. Well, what's the deal here? So you and Martha, and have you've been on Martha Stewart?
I have been on Martha Stewart.
Well, let's hear about it. That's big
time. You know what?
You're talking about the show, right?
I'm talking about... Yeah.
Okay. I'm starting to understand the 9-page spread.
That's it. Oh, jeez.
That's how you got that spread.
Yeah,
okay.
So hey, folks, I'm here all week.
Yeah. Anyway, oh, my God. This is going. I can see where this is going now.
Yeah. That's the kind of show.
Oh, this was a Church League basketball game I was going for. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that may have been.
But, no, you know what? She was just really cool. She came in and a while back during the Super Bowl, I met her, and I met her previously in New York, and she invited me to the show to cook on the show, and that was a lot of fun, and And then after that, she sent a crew out to, you know, do this piece. And, it's, nice. You know, the whole world, like, my life's pretty kind of Forrest Gumpish anyway. I mean, I'm like the most unlikely, whatever. I know how ridiculous it is. And people say all the time, like, is this worth it? Is it worth the wait? I'm like, I'm the wrong person to ask. It's right. Like, it's so, like I said, the whole thing is really surreal. I mean, my life has been, like, to think about making pizza, you know, and being anywhere, but, like, you know, on your block, you're making a living, and,
that's,
and
it's just. I mean, the success story has just been phenomenal, and the, I mean, everybody talks about the wait, but it is a long wait down there. You're down at Heritage Square, but hey, it's worth it, though, right?
So he used to be at Town and Country a long time ago.
That's right.
Long,
you go way back.
Oh yeah, and we used to go in there, and he finds this cool place downtown, and he says he says to Jerry Colangelo and a couple others, and my husband I think was in the room, he said, we're gonna move downtown. And it's like 3 years before the baseball stadium opened up, and you know Jerry and Rich are like the biggest fans of the downtown. Go they're right. Like, oh my god, that is the dumbest thing I have ever heard. This is you are gonna die down there, so you're never gonna make it, no one's ever gonna come.
A nighttime restaurant.
He goes, no, I think it's really gonna work. And they're like,
well, that's when the my own ignorance is you know, got me in a lot of trouble, and I've also been very fortunate, you know.
Man.
Within three weeks there was a line out the door at 4
what about that wine bar next to it, do you own that?
Yeah, I have that too.
That's yours. Is that part of the deal? Is that people drink for 3 hours so
we
they
get
think
them
the
hammered
pizza's great?
That's exactly.
Has anyone ever had that pizza sober?
I had some nuns from Omaha. That were good time, but
and they said it was good.
They said it was actually heavenly. That was their quote.
Heavenly, good. Okay.
But no, it's a pretty. I don't know. Most times, just kind of keep my head down and I'm still freaked out.
What happens when Martha Stewart rolls in, though? Now, she's not waiting 3.5
hours. No, she's not waiting. We whisk her in like, you know, like the rock star that she is.
Okay, and what about Seinfeld? Didn't he show up down there? And
yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, he's actually really cool. And
does he go there, like, whenever he comes to town?
Sometimes. I mean, I see him sometimes. Like.
And what about Jack? I just watched this Jack Nicholson movie, As Good As It Gets, because we're supposed to watch it for some reason for acting cues, and anyway, when you see Jack, you know, forget it, he hasn't been in that many movies lately.
No. Right.
It's been a while. I mean, the guy is so incredible. So how was he
you know what,
rolling
he was,
in?
He
had to be cool.
I don't know, I got all this information. Most from our producer, Seth Sokol, got all this inside information.
Come on, dude, I was the attorney general.
No, well,
I know a lot more than that.
That's true.
I'm not going into what we found in your trunk.
Yeah, that shadowy figure outside my car, allegedly.
Yeah, right, no, I don't know what that stuff was.
No, you know what, he was an incredible, really fascinating guy.
Did you get to talk with him?
I did get to talk to him. Actually, in the back of a restaurant, he told me a great story about one of the greatest meals he had was made by a caddy at St. Andrews at like 5:30 in the morning before he went out. And it was a classic story of a guy that probably ate everything and found this, you know, great enjoyment from this kind of omelet made by a caddy made in darkness. It was a classic story. I'll never forget.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Now, all those people you named, did any of them see a check?
You know what? They did see a check.
Really?
Oh, yeah. You got to see a check.
See, because normally you guys, you know, you hook those people up, and then the poor schmucks like me.
No, everybody pays.
I come in.
Good. That's what it should be.
No, absolutely.
There was an old thing. There was an old Pavarotti story, something about he was supposed to, you know, they asked him to donate his time or something like that, and he said, you know, screw that. I'll send you a check, and then. I guess he donated the money afterwards. I don't donate the money. I keep the money.
Yeah.
But it's like, I try to keep things on the up and up. I mean, I try to, you know.
No, what's crazy is these celebrities, they're used to not paying for anything.
It's
they've got more money than anybody. They're the most capable of paying, and they walk around without their wallets, and they just assume. And I'm not talking about the people we just named are real celebrities. I mean, that'd be one thing. I mean, I wouldn't judge Jack Nicholson either. But when, Britney Spears, Kevin Federline rolls in, who gives a shit? Pay double. We don't want you in here.
I heard years ago, Ted Williams was real tight.
Mm-hmm.
He used to go out to dinner and pay for the meal with a check. Because he knew they'd never cash it.
Ah.
Because you'd rather have
Ted Williams
autograph.
Hilarious.
Than you would cash the $40 check for.
Good thing.
Is that
genius?
I'm going to try that.
You don't take checks.
I have tried that, and it doesn't work because when I write Ted Williams on my check, people go, dude, he's dead. His head is in Scottsdale.
His head is frozen.
Is that still there?
Supposedly.
Yep.
That was not good, that whole thing. Yeah. Hey, let's try to call up old Jesse and see if we can get him on the line here. And
before you keep going, and while we're waiting for him, you never got to my weekend.
Yeah,
fine.
Let's hear it.
No, whatever.
No, no, come on.
But
I gave you plenty of opportunity. I didn't want to embarrass you.
I go in order.
Obviously, nothing happened, but maybe not.
I went to a party on Saturday night where Nate Nathan played guitar, and now he is a student of your
John Kaiser. How'd he do?
He did great. He was sweating bullets. He was very nervous because it was all of his, you know, real close friends.
And is he playing acoustic or
he
electric?
He did.
Or?
John came with him and played with them, and they sang together.
Oh,
and
God.
He did a great job.
Really? Good
and
for him.
And I saw John and spent Saturday night with him. He was fun.
Really?
What's his name?
His name is Nate Nathan.
He's
big
a
time
local
land broker, Nathan Associates.
But that's, isn't that word?
Nate
parents
Nathan?
Had no imagination.
Hey, I just told you, one of our guests later on is Robert Robb. So knock it off with Nate Nathan jokes.
Actually, that's kind of funny.
Come on.
It's like, you know who had no imagination? Efren Zimbalist Jr.'s parents.
We needed a junior.
Dude,
of that.
Come on.
That's right. We have Jesse on the line. Hey, Jesse, are you there?
I'm here, Grant.
Wow, he is.
Hey, how
are
you doing? I'm doing good. I thought, you know, you sound like Walter Matthau.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, you do.
And I look like Larry King. Between the two of them, who needs him?
No, you're a legend. We appreciate you being on here.
A legend, that's it.
You
hey,
are.
Grant, one thing I would ask you to do.
Okay.
Speak as loudly as you can.
Oh, okay, it's a deal. Oh, get that miracle ear going. Now, you're a rich guy. You can afford to get a new miracle ear every year. You know that?
A numerical ear?
maybe you can't. Maybe you can't. Never mind. Hey, so those who don't know the legend here, Mr. Choper here, Dean Choper, Professor Choper, is the founding law school dean at one of the country's top law schools at UC Berkeley. It's called Bolt. And not only that, he was on all sorts of lists over the years of possible Supreme Court nominees. And I don't know. Is it too late now? I mean, are you over the hill now?
They
so?
Don't appoint him when you have the first digit is a 7.
Well, that's their loss anyway. But we wanted to talk to you a little bit about you. You keep all the AGs. You've been doing it for years. You fill us in on what's going on in the court, and you've just got, you know, such great insight into the court. First, could you tell people Justice Souter? He was kind of an unknown. I thought coming in, he is a former attorney general from New Hampshire, and appointed by a Republican, and he turned out to be a big surprise on the court, right?
Yes, he was appointed by a Republican. He was a Republican. The reason that he was appointed, I don't mean the reason, but a strong reason that put him up as an aspirant, a serious aspirant, was that no one did know anything about him.
Mm-hmm.
President Reagan had big problems with his appointments because of the things that they'd said and done.
Right.
They called Souter at the time, this is almost 20 years ago now, the stealth candidate. No one knew anything about him. He'd served for a long time on the Supreme Court of New Hampshire. He was sponsored, although his patron was Warren Rudman.
Right, he was very conservative.
He was a moderate to liberal then.
Well, conservative economic senator. Policy. The old Graham Rudman bill was his
exactly.
big deal.
Exactly. Yeah. But what got him the job was the sponsorship of John Sununu, who
there
was
you
then.
Go.
President Bush's chief of staff.
Right, and former
Sununu
governor.
Guaranteed it, that he was going to be a home run as a conservative.
Yep. Oops. And how long did that last?
1 year strong, good strong signs in the second year of his motion to the left, and by the end of the third year, he was a regular in the liberal camp.
Unbelievable.
The biggest surprise that I've seen, certainly in modern times, in terms of the quickness of the move from one side to the other. I should say he was very conservative in his first year.
Wow.
I can give you details, but he was.
Wow. And when you say he was he became a liberal on the court that quickly, you could, for example, when I argued in front of the court, you'd kind of size them up. Here's where these justices might line up. Here's where these might line up. Here's the ones that we got to look out for. They're kind of in the middle. Souter was one you could pretty much always count on every time to be on the liberal side, even
by
though
his third year.
Yeah, wow.
He was certainly one of the three core liberals. The fourth, presently on the court, and during almost his whole whole tenure on the court, is Stephen Breyer, and he is the liberal who's most likely to vote conservative. But Souter, very rarely, very rarely.
Yeah, that's an amazing thing. So now, with Souter leaving, first tell people, one of the things you do, Jesse, that's really fascinating is you look at how you look at every decision that the court makes each year. And over the years, you've looked at how they've paired up, and consequently, who really ended up being the most influential justices. And and for example, Sandra Day O'Connor,
she was for her whole existence on the court, the strongest vote.
Right, the most important vote. Do you agree with this? I used to tell people. And it's funny, she's from Arizona, and
yes,
just a real Arizonan, not just someone who passed through here, a native Arizonan who, I mean, I always thought she reminded me of Barry Goldwater in drag, frankly. I mean, she talks like him, acts like him. She's just a real native Arizonan, and I thought in her day, she may have been the most powerful woman in the country.
I think you're wrong. I think she was the most powerful public official in the country.
Ah, man or woman. Interesting.
I think she had the ability to decide issues, and once she decided them, it was over. You know, there wasn't any place to go.
Right.
She decided whether affirmative action was permissible. She decided how strong the separation of church and state was. She decided the validity of the provisions of the McCain-Feingold bill, and on and on and on. She was conservative-leaning generally, but she was the liberal, the conservative, who was most likely to be caught by the four liberals
right.
to make a 5-4 decision, which is the ones that divide them, and very predictable. She was never really very predictable.
She was not an ideologue. She was more practical. She had a lot of practical
experience.
She was
a pragmatist.
Former prosecutor, former legislator, former judge.
Yeah. Yeah, and she wanted to do the right thing, and she fashioned opinions so that they were very narrow. They never bound very much of anything. And, I mean, that is a particular kind of constitutional adjudicator.
So that's how
it was the difference between her and people like Nino Scalia.
Sure.
Who is a guy of principle. Mm-hmm. He likes big rules.
Right.
Predictable
right.
where he's going to go. She was never really predictable.
She's trying to achieve justice in a particular case or a particular situation, maybe. What about Souter, then? How would you put him when you were looking at how he judged?
I think he generally voted in favor of individual rights when they came into conflict with government regulation. He voted in favor of national power versus states' rights, and he voted for expansive federal court jurisdiction as opposed to state court mm-hmm. jurisdiction favored. And those are the key things which, for me, identify a liberal versus a conservative Supreme Court justice.
Now, one more thing on Souter. Did you know, or do you know Souter very well?
I know him some. I can't say I know him very well. I know some of them pretty well. I've been with him several times. And
I've only been around him a couple times, but I remember I remember one time in particular, there were like three of us talking with him, and he, for some time, for about a half an hour, and he told about an 8 or 9 minute story. Now, Mark, you'd appreciate that. You know, when you're going to tell an 8 or 9 minute story, it's got to have a good punchline. There's got to be a reason for that, right?
Payoff.
And we got to the end, and there was no point to the story, and I mean, it was just like over, and I thought, my God.
No, of course, I never
very
did
quirky
have that
guy.
Experience. I had dinner with him twice, at a table of six
right.
or eight people, and
he was right out of Newhart, that show where he had the inn up in New Hampshire. He was like one of the characters in Newhart, and he's a guy who I know he used to live with his mother. He's a bachelor.
He lived in the same house that he grew up in.
Right.
Which may well have been his grandparents' house as
right.
well.
Never left.
He'd get out of Washington as soon as he can mm-hmm. when the term was over. And I think that's what he's in good health.
Yeah.
There's no question about that. And he likes to do a lot of hiking and climbing.
Yeah.
And he wants to do that. He did not like Washington at all.
No. Goes there as a bachelor, leaves as a bachelor, and really never got out of the house, it doesn't sound like. So, a very, very unusual guy. And like you said, that I think that pick, and this happens a lot of times, some people can get so worried about the confirmation fight that they look for someone who really has no record and isn't going to cause any problems. And with Suter, they found somebody who really nobody knew much of anything about.
Yeah, they didn't know. He was smart. He had he'd been a Rhodes Scholar, and he'd been on the Supreme Court of New Hampshire for mm-hmm. a bunch of years, and he was a respected judge.
An attorney general, so he's
qualified.
Attorney
general
then.
For, what, one term?
Wow.
Well, yeah, but that's enough. I mean,
and he was a trial court judge
right.
in New Hampshire.
Right, he certainly was well qualified. Okay, well, tell us what you think on where the president may go as far as picking his selection. You got any thoughts
on
that?
Well, I think the basic fix that people have on it is accurate, and that is he's got two very important constituencies that supported him in large numbers and that he's sympathetic to in any event that are underrepresented. One is women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, women probably, well in the 40 percentiles. In terms of lawyers and moving up there in terms of judges, and
right.
they've only got one out of nine, whereas they did have two.
Right.
That's going to have to be repaired very quickly.
Absolutely.
And the other, which is even more glaring, is the biggest minority group in the country are Hispanics.
Right.
And they not only don't they have anybody, they never had anybody.
No,
so
true.
He's going to have to do one or the other, or both. And he's got one person who's a strong candidate for both.
And who is that?
And that is a judge on the Federal Court of Appeals in New York named Sotomayor, spelled S-O-T-O-M-A-J-O-R. She's a Puerto Rican. She came from Puerto Rico, grew up in the Puerto Rican area of the city with no money, it is supposed to be very bright, I think we'll, unless they, start looking in deeply to a record, which I have not done, and find something in her opinions that'll give the conservatives in the Senate, who don't have very, they don't have much room anyway.
No, not anymore.
Because they may not even have 41 votes by the time it all starts, because now they're... There are 59 Democrats in the Senate with specter-changing parties.
Right.
And Al Franken in Minnesota has, been
right.
the winner on every stage of his litigation. So anyway,
you think,
I think she'd be easily confirmed.
Yeah, okay. And does she, let's say either she goes on or someone like her ideologically, does that change much on the court, do you think, as far
changes
as...
Changes nothing,
okay.
It would greatly change it if you could get a conservative
and
to fill a liberal
position.
That
doesn't seem likely, though, does it?
I think Obama's pretty much committed. I think he has his own views about what a Supreme Court justice should do. He,
mm-hmm.
he taught the course in
sure.
constitutional law for... a couple of years at the University of Chicago Law School.
Bush was a constitutional scholar, wasn't he?
Pardon me?
No.
Ooh,
just,
Bush?
Yeah, just kidding.
Ah, Bush wasn't even a lawyer.
That's why he was so enthralled with the Harriet Myers pick. That was a classic. But no, what I'm thinking is when we look to the future here, Obama could get several picks here. I mean, you tell me.
He could get
Justice Stevens, isn't he in his 80s?
Close. His next birthday will be his 90th.
90th, okay.
No way.
So he's going to retire at some
yes,
point
I
in time.
Yes, I think he'll certainly leave the court.
Under Obama.
But he's in good health. Mm-hmm. And he shows no signs of wanting to go anyplace.
Right. Well, what else are you going to do?
In the last couple of months?
What are you going to do? I mean, after you've been on the Supreme Court all this time, are you going to just sit home and watch The View?
And he's also a liberal.
Yeah.
So if you have Stevens retire, that doesn't change the immediate complexion of the court. If
that's exactly right. And the next most likely is
Ginsburg.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Because she's been ill and she's
76 years old,
right.
Which is about 5 years older than anybody else.
So what happens, those three, so one of them is already left suitor now. Now you have Ginsburg and Stevens going. What that would do then is not change how the votes might come out in the short term, but it solidifies this liberal majority, if you will, for a long, long
period
of time.
That's exactly right.
Right.
See, if you could get a conservative for a liberal, then you'd really put the liberal... Look, they're at a disadvantage as it is.
Yes. And that's because Kennedy is a swing vote. Is that right?
Or liberal leanings. If you... Right. You know, the liberals try to move one over. They succeed. The one they succeed most frequently now is with Anthony Kennedy.
Right.
But if they had to move two, they're between a rock and a hard place. I'm not a mathematician, but that is exponentially more difficult.
Yes. So whereas before you were telling us O'Connor was the key, and sometimes and many times Kennedy would go with O'Connor, but you really only needed one of them. Now you've got to get Kennedy pretty much, unless you come up with some sort of strange thing.
Kennedy rules, as they say.
Yeah, that's right. Pretty interesting. Any chance any of those conservatives would step down during Obama's first 4 years?
I don't think any of them would voluntarily step down.
Okay. All right.
No, but, you know, that's not the only way vacancies are created.
Yeah.
And Scalia and Kennedy are in there. They're in their 70s.
Well, I got one more question for you, Jesse, and we'll let you go. And that is on a whole nother topic. I know you spend a little time at the track, and you know your horse racing. Are you on some sort of horse racing commission?
I'm on a California horse racing board.
That's what I thought.
After 35 years.
You made it.
The governor finally appointed me.
And it was Governor Schwarzenegger.
It was. I've never met him. So
well, he's
I got to admire his independence. I
love him. I'm a big fan of his.
So am I.
He's my kind of Republican there.
Yes,
well, tell me.
Breath of fresh air, but boy, he can't get much done there.
Well, tell me, what was your reaction to Mind That Bird?
Off the charts.
That was great, huh?
It was a wonderful thing.
And how about that ride?
I watched it. I could not go out that day, but I watched it on TV.
Mm-hmm.
That was it was a wonderful ride. Let me put it that way.
It really was.
But that horse, I mean, but he won by almost 7 lengths.
Yeah.
And the fact that he ran along the rail all the time helped him. But not by 7 lengths. Something. Look, I talked to a this is where I can really tell you about. I talked to a friend of mine a former student, actually, the lawyer here in Berkeley. And we dope it out when we go out. He doped it out himself. He said, no way on God's earth could you see that horse winning the race. He said, I don't care what it is, mud, which he likes apparently, or anything else.
No way he could win.
So you never know, as they say it.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, that was absolutely crazy. And the idea that his trainer hauled him there in the back of a pickup in his trailer all the way from New Mexico, and they paid $9,500 for him, because you're going up against million-dollar horses and multi-million-dollar operations. And
the one thing that should be added that you haven't read about is that his original purchase was at $400,000.
Yeah.
But he just never worked out that well.
Unbelievable.
And therefore, when they sold him, when he was resold, they paid under $10,000.
That's phenomenal. Oh, and he got over $1 million, I assume, for winning the Kentucky Derby.
There's a $2 million plus purse. He gets half of it.
Yeah. Now they said today he is going to run in the Preakness. It looks like. Do you think he's got a shot there, or was this a one-time thing? Come on now.
I can tell you we got a shot at the Supreme Court. Do I think he can win again?
Yes.
No.
Okay.
Does that mean anything? No.
All right, Jesse. We're going to let you go. I really appreciate you,
Grant,
you joining
you're
us.
You're one of the people I greatly admire. It's always great to talk to you.
All right. Thank you very much.
You
we'll
too.
Talk to you soon. All right. That's Dean Choper, Jesse Choper from University
very
of California,
cool.
Berkeley.
He's got a great voice.
Doesn't he?
You could listen to him all night.
You know what? He's just an awesome guy.
I could listen to him tell a nine-minute story and not even care if I had
not
to pay
care
off. By the way, that's some good inside tips. So now, if I heard it right, he thinks J-Lo is going to be the next judge.
Could
that's
be J-Lo.
Awesome. She could fill out that robe.
You know what? I don't. You know what? I considered from behind.
Yeah.
I considered once. I don't know if I ever sent it. I hope to God I didn't. But I was going to send President someone. Clinton. I was going to send Clinton a letter when he was filling one of his. Spots that I know I sent him a letter saying twice he had two spots saying you should appoint a Hispanic because for the same reasons that Dean Choper just said that you know I mean come on it's about time you know and at one time it was recommended strongly to me by all these Republican people that there was this guy in Texas who was fantastic who was really close to the Bushes and they loved him and thought he was great Gonzalez
oh, yeah God.
And I almost stuck that in there I think I didn't because I said well I don't really know much about the guy I better not do that
good
just
call.
Just a point oh my God can you imagine that would have been very grim
what I get the whole thing, and I buy the logic that, you know, a woman and a Hispanic mm-hmm. woman. But when you kind of set out with that, isn't that kind of like profiling?
Yeah, well, but it's important. I'm all for it.
Yeah.
I understand what you're saying, but here's the thing. It's important, for example, to have an African American as president is important. The way I look at it, all things being equal, if you could have an African American as president, you'd say yes. Mm. Now, that doesn't mean I necessarily thought that going in. Obviously, I was for McCain, originally here. Now I support the president, obviously. But I would say all things being equal out there, yeah, if you could appoint another woman, that would be great. If you could appoint an Hispanic, great. I don't believe in it if you have to appoint people who aren't as good as others.
Right.
But when you're talking about lawyers or judges who are capable of serving well on the United States Supreme Court. There's a lot of people there. I mean, your pool there, depending on your ideology, is going to be pretty big. And in other words, there's probably 10, 20, 30 people who might be on that list. So I'm sure there are many women on there, and hopefully there are many Hispanics, and he'll pick one or the other. I'm confident he'll pick a woman.
Yeah.
You think he's limiting his choices, though?
No. I mean, I agree with what Grant said. If he finds one that's totally qualified, that's just as good as. But I think if you kind of narrow it down,
well,
and say,
I agree.
This
it is weird to get that, you know, to narrow it and then narrow it again and say that's what I'm looking for. Yeah. I get that. But
well,
obviously, as a woman, I think it's important too.
Well, who did that? Bush 1 did it and picked Clarence Thomas. I mean, are you kidding me? The guy was not qualified, at least in my view.
Great television, though.
It was great television, but I mean, this guy is. I mean, I don't think he was qualified, but I think it was Bush wanted to make the statement, I'm going to appoint an African-American, I'm a Republican, and all that. And that was great, except the one he picked. So I think he did go way down. Now, obviously, people who are very conservative out there think he's great. But, you know, he's an unusual character if you followed him. For example, on the bench, and this is a lot of lawyer talk, but, you know, people have said for the first 2 months we've been doing this, we never talk about the law, so we're getting
here
it over
we are.
We're getting over with tonight.
That's why I came.
Careful what you wish for, honey.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right.
No, but Clarence Thomas has only participated in oral arguments in front of the court a handful of times, and he's been on there for however long, well over a decade now. So every year you have argument after argument after argument. And all the justices engage, and they're fully prepared, and they ask questions of the lawyers. When I argued in front of the court, they asked me something like 40 questions during my time, which was, I mean, the clerk came over and said, you know, we're going to check. That's close to a record. I mean, they were just peppering me with questions, okay? None from
were
Thomas.
Were they just asking until you got one right? What were
yes,
they doing?
Yes, they were.
Wrong.
No, they... They had a lot of questions, and you know, there's a lot of they're trying to convince them each other. You know, they, you can tell who's on one side and someone else. Sometimes they'll answer for you because they want to jump in. They don't really care what you have to say anyway. Clarence Thomas never asks a question. This year, for example, we're in May. It's been going on all year. He hasn't asked a question yet. Now, you know, what does that mean? I don't know. It's just
not
odd.
Very curious.
You know, obviously he's prepared. He reads it. He just doesn't believe that much in oral argument, I guess. It's very strange to me, though. I mean, that's part of the deal.
Right.
Everyone else who's ever been on the court and who is on the court now engages in oral argument, not him.
Did you see anything weird when Obama said he wants somebody that's empathetic and did that
I'm not quite
cause
sure
any concern?
That. No, I think I know what he means there. I think he's not looking for necessarily someone who is going to be an ideological choice. In other words, when you pick Scalia, you picked someone who was going to promote a conservative judicial philosophy on the court. That's what he's on there for. Everything is going to be viewed from that prism. And that's fine. That's your prerogative as president. It sounded as if he's not going to do that on the liberal side. As Dean Schoper described Sandra Day O'Connor, you would probably say that about her. That is someone who is more empathetic to the particular case in
case
front of
case.
Them. Case by
yeah,
case.
Absolutely.
And not necessarily confined to the case, but confined to the issue that we're talking about. In other words, when I argued about we tried to take the prison law libraries out of all the prisons, which we did. Okay. Well, we're going to look at this as federal rights versus states' rights, the individual rights versus government rights, from some ideological prison, someone like Justice O'Connor would say, okay, well, what's the deal here? In Arizona, how does this negatively affect you in Arizona? You have to have 22 state-of-the-art law libraries. Why? Why do the prisoners need that? And how does that affect other states? Well, how are they going to get access to the courts? What if they're being mistreated? How are you going to handle that? In other words, she's going to get into the issue like that and decide it. Not say, I don't really care about all that. I believe this is a states' right issue and the federal government should not be involved, which a conservative could say. Okay, so I think that's where Obama's going. I don't know. It's interesting. This is what he does. I mean, this is his background. So this is going to be quite the pick, I think.
It will be interesting. He's intellectual. She's intellectual. You know that they're talking about that.
Oh,
at
yeah,
home. I mean,
yeah,
this
yeah.
This is over the, you know.
This is not a Harriet Myers pick.
No.
Where Bush said, oh, see, I've got, you know, 10,000, 20, no, forget that. I've got 100,000 people probably that I could choose from in the biggest pool imaginable. Hey, how about Harriet down the hall there? She seems nice. That's who he picked. I mean, what the hell? I mean, it's not going to be one of those picks. He's going to pick somebody who actually knows what they're doing,
yeah.
I would think.
Thank
yeah.
God.
We're going to call Bob, Rob? Oh, we got Bob?
Wow.
Hey, great. Bob? Nope, he's calling him right now. Good.
All right.
We have to say Robert Rob.
Yes.
Okay.
Robert Rob?
Yes.
Wow.
Okay, here we go.
No, I'm just, I want to make sure I get it right.
He's so nice, they named him twice. That's what we used to say. Okay, and then no Nate Nathan jokes. Okay. All right, we
it's
ready
a great
for Bob?
Name.
Yeah, he's calling him up.
Waiting on Bob. Robert.
He TiVo's Celebrity Apprentice every week, so he's very fired up for the 3-hour finale with Joan Rivers.
Can she live through 3 hours of that?
And the poker player.
God,
without
I love
having
that.
Something operated on. She took a break in the middle to have her eyes done. She'll be right
wow.
back.
Wow.
What's the story?
What about Geppetto's son?
They kept asking on there of that what Jesse James guy.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, I mean, when he watches the show now with Sandra Bullock, he's married to Sandra Bullock.
Yeah.
They must have said 50 times on there, why is she married to him? Are you hiding something from us that we don't really see?
Why is Sandra Bullock married to Jesse James?
Yes.
Can
because
you drop now?
The implication is like, dude, you're weak.
Yeah.
What the hell? How did you like Sandra Bullock? But they didn't say it like once. They said it like 2 or 3 times a show.
Do you know who
That's
he was
insulting.
Married to before her?
No.
this big porno chick. I mean, I've just heard this.
Here we go.
God, this, it's a theme with you.
I heard this.
It's really sick. Chris,
we were talking
about
this at church.
Yes.
No, I don't even know who she is, but she's this gorgeous porno chick. And that's who he was married to before, Sandra Bullock.
Wow. Well, I do think.
But the home movies are good.
Did you watch some of him on the show?
Oh, yeah.
He seemed like a cool guy.
He's very cool.
I liked him. And, you know, the poker player chick, I mean, you couldn't be around her for 5 minutes.
Oh, God. How exhausting is she? I can't believe I wrote a song.
I can't believe it. I'm so proud of me. I'm so great. Yeah. Everything is like
that.
Absolutely ludicrous. But I don't know, 3 hours of those two.
I want to see Fight to the Death cage match.
I know. Well, I don't
That's
know.
Pay-per-view.
Yeah,
that's,
I know.
I'd pay for that.
That'd be better than that Pacino Hatton fight. All right. Bob Robb, are you on there?
I am.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. And you?
Well, I'm doing good. We got in the house, we have Chris Bianco from Pizzeria Bianco. We got Mark Cordes and Gary Dozer. And they're all just sitting here hanging on every word you're about to say here. Because you're such a smart guy. And I've told them that if they listen to all of our discussion about Jack Kemp all the way through, I'll tell them a really good, juicy secret story from your high school or college days.
Well, you know that's a dangerous trend to start.
Could be crazy.
Yeah, I don't want to do
it. I don't know if I can handle it.
If they can stay awake during the conversations, I'll worry about the consequences.
All right. Now, we have a long-held... Remember the old days of nuclear deterrence, the mutual assured destruction theory? You don't shoot the first missile because you'll get three
You're
or four back.
You're going to get shot, that's right.
So we have that agreement. And Bob is, of course, at the Arizona Republic. And Bob, how do you like blogging, by the way? Because, you know, our whole deal, we're totally internet-based. And, at the start, I don't know how great you thought that was. But have you gotten into that now, or you still think it's a pain in the ass?
No, I always, anytime you've got an outlet for your thoughts and... Even though I write three times a week, hopefully a substantive column, that leaves lots of thoughts and ideas out there, and being able to incorporate them into the blog simply provides for more opportunity to get the thoughts out there.
And do you ever respond to people?
It allows incoming fire at me.
Yes, that's not good. Some of them are good, but then there's some people who... In any public blog, there's just nothing you can do about it. You know, they're on there. You could be talking about TARP funds, and they'll be saying, "Well, it's the illegal aliens. That's the problem."
But not infrequently, the I will start out on topic A, and the readers steal the initiative and change it into a debate between themselves on topic B, but. that's sort of what.
But you don't have to join
the
in.
The new world's about. Yeah, I will stick with topic A.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good. Stick to your guns there. But now, Bob, one thing about Bob is, for those of you who don't know, Bob and I we've been close friends since about ninth grade. Went to high school together. We walked miles to school in the heat.
Uphill both ways.
Yes. Went to college together and have been friends ever since. And Bob was a champion at Occidental College, where we went undergrad, of standing up for his conservative views. And we went there from Mesa because our parents wanted us, they thought that was a great idea we had to go to Occidental because it was a Presbyterian school. And we were Presbyterians. And we walked on campus, and I don't think we ever saw a Presbyterian. I didn't. You remember the first church service we went to first Sunday, and this minister is in there, so-called, and it was like, let us pray. Forgive us for our atrocities in Vietnam. And then it went on from there, you know, and like, oh, my God, you know. So it was founded by Presbyterians but had nothing to do with Presbyterians.
Yeah, I think the church had... severed its relationship with the college back in about 1920.
It had, and yet that hadn't reached Mesa yet. But anyway, yeah. Bob became the editor of the newspaper and just drove the professors and everyone there crazy with his constant conservative views. But he remained true to them. And over the years, one person, now, of course, Barack Obama famously went to Occidental, but one person who we both came to admire, who was an Occidental grad, was Jack Kemp. And, Bob, I know you followed his career really from the beginning, and with his passing this weekend, I wonder if you could just tell all our listeners what your thoughts are about Jack Kemp and the man and his philosophy and the impact he had on this country.
Sure. Let me begin with the impact and his historical significance, because I think it's underappreciated and understated. Prior to Kemp, the central economic focus of Republicans was to try to achieve a balanced federal budget by limiting federal spending. Kemp argued that no, the economic focus should be on trying to promote economic growth, principally through lowering income tax rates with an emphasis on individual income tax rates. That was picked up by Ronald Reagan. He made it mm-hmm. a centerpiece of his campaign in 1980. He was elected. It got enacted, and it's been the central focus of Republican economic thought ever since. And that began with Kemp.
And it worked.
It did work.
You know, they cut the rates. How much did they cut the rates?
The top marginal. It was initially 25% across the board. There was also another round of tax reforms in 1986. And the end result was, during the Reagan years, to bring the top individual marginal tax rate down from 70%, which was what it was when Ronald Reagan entered office, to 28%,
right,
which it was when Reagan left office. It then, under Bill Clinton, under George Bush the first, it went up to, I believe, 31%,
mm-hmm.
and then upwards to 39.5%. under Bill Clinton, back down to 35% under George Bush the second, and Barack Obama proposes to push it back to the 39.5%.
So that was a huge cut, but Kemp advocating that, he was with his background, and you know, he was a star quarterback at Occidental, and which didn't mean that much, because
you talked about how you guys played.
Well, they don't have athletic scholarships, although his roommate was Jim Mora at Oxy, who also went on to a big football career and a coaching career as well. But Kemp went on to be a big star in the AFL, led his Bills to two championships, and that background of being around people from all sorts of different backgrounds themselves, not just rich kids, but people with a very diverse background, diverse ethnically, racially, it made a big impact on Kemp as how he looked at America and what America had to offer, don't you think?
And that was the other, I think, historical significance part of Jack Kemp, and one that the Republicans haven't hung on to as well as they have held on to his economic ideas.
Right.
Kemp was bored talking to Republican audiences and people who naturally agreed with him. He became animated and engaged when he was talking to people who were generally of a liberal orientation, who had a concern for the poor and the less well-off, and who thought that the pathway to progress for those people was through more government.
Right.
And Kemp very much cared about their plight and passionately felt that, no, their advancement was going to occur through progress in the private sector, driven mm-hmm. by economic growth and opportunity. And that was what animated him, and that was when he was engaged. And I think
right.
the idea of selling the ideas rather than organizing those who already believe is something that the Republican Party has lost.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. It's ironic that he passed away on the same day that they were meeting back east to try to figure out, you know, what was wrong and why they were getting creamed so much, although I doubt they got it, that they, if they looked to someone like Jack Kemp and his message, they would probably provide a way a way out. I want to just read something real quick that I cut out here from his comments. He was talking really about during the election last year, focusing kind of toward Obama and his big government philosophy. It just takes a second here, but this is what he wrote last April, Jack Kemp. He said, "In my opinion, people of all colors and income levels don't hate the rich. They want to get rich. They're more interested in generating wealth than they are in redistributing wealth. They want to own property, educate their children, and build a nest egg that can be passed on to their heirs. Unfortunately, some aren't able to access the same ladder of opportunity that is so readily available to the majority. By giving people access to capital and allowing them to take ownership of assets, entrepreneurship will be encouraged and the cycle of poverty can begin to be broken. All persons should have the opportunity to go as high as their merit and determination can carry them. My favorite quote is from Abraham Lincoln, who said, 'I don't believe in a law to prevent a man from getting rich. It would do more harm than good.' So while we do not propose any war upon capital, we do wish to allow the humblest man an equal chance to get rich with everybody else." And then Jack Kemp wrote, "Lincoln's definition of entrepreneurial capitalism is the best I've ever heard."
And Kemp believed that in every fiber of his body. And as I said, it is what animated him, not trying to create opportunities for those that already have them, but to create opportunities for those that he thought had not received an adequate chance at them. And he thought that was very much through expanding economic growth and opportunity.
I guess he thought he had a shot at being named by Bush 1 to the ticket, and instead Bush took Quayle, obviously. And then he named Jack Kemp to be his HUD director. So he was probably disappointed at that. And I know he was disappointed when Bush went the other way and raised taxes rather than cut taxes. But while he was Secretary of HUD, he didn't just sit there like most guys do and not do anything. He was out there preaching the gospel according to entrepreneurial capitalism. I mean, I remember him going all around the country trying to create free enterprise zones, and he did things as tried to do things as HUD director. He tried anyway, that I don't think anybody's ever tried before.
Well, and also as HUD director, he tried to transform public housing from being rented to being owned. That was his principal effort. I once wrote that if we had a parliamentary system, I thought that Jack Kemp probably would have been prime minister. He was the guy with the ideas and the energy and could make the presentation. But the reality is that he made, I regret to say it since I admire him so much, a pretty lousy national political candidate,
right.
Both when he ran for president in 1988 and when he ran as vice president in for Bob Dole in 1996. He was too full of ideas.
He was.
And did not have the discipline that we perhaps regrettably demand.
Right.
In a candidate for national office like that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it was frustrating and surprising because as a candidate, unfortunately, you've got to get out there and you've got to make your points and get off. You know, you just boom, boom, boom. These are the talking points for today, and you do it and you stay on message and you get a guy, you know, let's take President Bush, who was absolutely great at getting elected. He was elected. He's never lost. Well, I guess he lost his first race and he won twice for governor, twice for president. Give him the talking points, he would stay on message. The thing about Kemp is if you went to a Kemp speech, that thing might go on for a couple of hours because he just was so excited about it.
Well, I had a chance when I was editor of the newspaper at Occidental, and Kemp came to campus to be a lecturer and spent a couple of days on campus, and I got to trot around and watch him in a variety of forums and got to spend some time with him. And what struck me is something I also think is underappreciated. Was the incredible hunger he had for information and public policy analysis.
That's rare among politicians as well.
We had, I mean, this is back in 1976. Kemp Roth was introduced in 1978. He was still in the process at that point in time of formulating his ideas. At that point in time, he was more conventionally oriented towards business tax cuts rather than the individual tax cuts that he ended up primarily advocating. But there is nothing that the man had not read.
Mm-hmm.
He exhausted me in the course of our conversation, asking me whether I
really?
Read this and read that and read this other thing. And so while he maintained the professional football demeanor,
right.
He had just an incredible hunger and appetite for information and public policy analysis, and ran in that field just as vigorously as he ran on the football field.
Wow, that's a real testament to him. Again, so many people just stop learning, and politicians in particular, at least I've found, they get stuck on, you know, year one. And God forbid they ever change their view or try to learn anything else. I'll tell you one little anecdote, the last one of any import for me with Jack Kemp. It's a long story, which I won't go into, but somehow, through some fluke, at the convention there in 96 when Dole got the nomination, they invited me up to, Senator Dole did, to be with him the night he was going to get nominated. And I got there early, and Dole came in, and no one else was there. It was great. And so I was sitting there with him for quite a while. It was very weird. I was like, isn't this the night?
This is it, right?
Is I going to the Twilight Zone? I mean, this guy's going to nominate for president tonight, and no one's around. And then the next two people who came in, or the next three people, were Jack and Joanne Kemp and Joanne's mother. And so they came in, oh, yeah, yeah. And Jack said, oh, Joanne, you remember Grant went to Occidental, you know? And, you know, Joanne, told Senator Dole, you know, Joanne went to Occidental, and her mom went to Occidental. Oh, really? Oh, what class were you in? And Oxy this and Oxy that. And this went on for about 7-8 minutes, and I mean forever, all this Oxy stuff. And Dole's standing there like, hey, what the hell? Who gives a shit about Occidental? I'm getting nominated for president. I really could care less. And we kind of all realized it at once, like, oh, okay,
why don't we move on?
Why don't we move on from that
time?
Anyone
want to do the fight song?
It was
no,
funny,
let's
yeah.
Not do it.
Well, her mom wanted to talk about it the whole time. Anyway.
Well, but it also illustrates incapacity to stay on point.
That's true. Probably could have passed on that there. Well, he was a great man, and you know, I hope as the Republican Party now struggles to figure out where it's going, maybe they'll take a look at someone like Jack Kemp. I mean, all they ever talk about is Ronald Reagan. I mean, it's just almost a joke how the Republicans fall back on Reagan, and that's all great. Reagan was great, but you know, there were others, and there are others, and maybe this is a little wake-up call. Take a look at Jack Kemp and what he stood for.
Well, Reagan himself borrowed heavily from Kemp, and
sure
I certainly think the spirit of Kemp is precisely what the Republican Party needs right now.
Yeah, I do too. All right, Bob, we'll be reading you in the Arizona Republic. I appreciate you coming on.
Enjoyed it.
Okay, man. We'll see you later.
Take care.
There's Robert Robb from the Arizona Republic and azcentral.com. You can check him out.
You know what? While Robert was talking, I was in my head, I was coming up with a list. Jack Kemp is my favorite former Buffalo Bill that did not kill his ex-wife and a waiter.
Allegedly.
Good point.
You.
Thank you, Chris, because he was acquitted.
Right. Right.
Means it didn't happen, right?
Yes,
okay.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah, he's there in the Ring of Honor. There's and our you know, the Ring of Honor around Bill's Stadium has, you know, OJ is there, unfortunately, but you know, what are you going to do? I mean, he had a great career, obviously. Jack Kemp is there, and Patrick McGroder Sr., and Pat is, you know, one of my best friends here, great trial lawyer here in town. His dad is in the Ring of Honor also. He was the general manager for the Bills forever. There, yeah. So they all knew OJ, and I know Jack Kemp was like, oh, God, that's not good. You know, what do you do?
Hey,
you know,
Hey, while you guys were talking to Bob, I think, my eyes aren't so good, but I think the Diamondbacks just had their second triple play in team history.
No way.
Led off by none other than shortstop Josh Wilson.
Oh, tell us about Josh Wilson.
So this is my cousin,
are you kidding me?
He comes from a gene pool with no deep end.
Crazy as loons, the Wilson.
Is
no,
it?
I'm kidding.
This is your cousin. He got called
up. Actually, he's my...
Because Stephen Drew was injured.
His dad is my first cousin. So Josh is from Pittsburgh, and his dad is the head coach at Duquesne. And my dad went to Duquesne, so all my dad's family's from Pittsburgh. So my dad's sister's family. And Helen Wilson's the old matriarch. She's great-grandma. And so, anyway.
The old matriarch.
She's no longer with us. But anyway, so Josh got called up. He was in the minors. He was like the last guy sent down at spring training, and he got called up a week ago, and
they turned a triple play.
He makes a diving catch to his right, comes up, throws to second, throws to first. That's
maybe
a triple
Duquesne
play.
Will get a little bit of
love. You know, I think they need it.
Wow, that's very cool that he's up here though.
It
you get to share that.
Absolutely awesome.
He made a great play the other day where
he did.
And Lopez on the other end where he makes the catch, spins around, tags the bag. Remember that play?
Yeah, his defense is awesome.
That play, and it was a good play by him. But that Lopez, that was sweet.
Grab, yeah. Nice grab.
That was cool. And then, tagged him. I don't know. Well, what about our D-backs? I do. Wow. I'm going to bring this up periodically just because I got so much shit for dumping on the D-backs before the season started. And they're, what is he, the president or something?
Derek?
Yeah.
Yes.
And he was on, and some thought I was a little harsh on him. And my number one point
was
they need a power hitter. And there was no way that lineup, people are going, oh, their pitching's going to suck, and this is going to suck, and that. No. I have no problem with any of it, except I have a big problem that they don't have a power hitter. And that team cannot win without a power hitter. But the interesting thing about it is you've got young hitters and potentially really good hitters. If you just stuck a power hitter there at number 3 or 4, all of a sudden those young guys who don't have to do it all, I think they would all blossom. They're all – I like them.
How about that home run Upton hit?
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
I saw Candiotti, or I heard him say he thought it was 480.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the stupid Brewers said it was, but that was a blast.
I had a 3-wood that far.
480, yeah, you probably do.
Yeah.
100 yards. I don't know. But the thing is, if you put a team out on the field, like the Yankees, you put them out there, you spend all this money, and they don't perform. You tried. It's disappointing and all that. But I don't think this is my beef I had to put the Diamondbacks with Hall was. I don't think we put a team out there that can – frankly, can compete. And I still don't think so. And Mr. Adam Dunn's rolling into town this weekend, and I'm sure he hates being on the Washington Nationals. Wow. Let's pick him up. Take him back. Why not?
Do you get many athletes into the restaurant?
We get a few athletes. I mean, not too many.
They can't wait that long.
No, they can't. They're on the go. And
the game will be over. They could put their name in before the game.
They could do that.
Play the game, come over afterwards.
And I'm sorry, it'll be a couple more minutes. Just if you just go next door, have a glass of wine.
Yeah.
What about Steve?
But they don't like to. I don't say they don't like to pay either. They don't want to come. They're like,
no. What about Nash? He rolls in
once in a while. He's a really super. I tell you, he's one of the probably most interesting. People I've met in sports,
really?
Just like the last thing you probably want to talk about with him is basketball and just more about.
He is awesome.
You know, he's got such a great. I think he's just a great man and really interesting on a lot of different subjects and good dude.
Well, and Dan Marley, has he ever
Dan
been
Marley?
In
yeah, Dan's a great guy. He's a good friend of mine, and
well,
he's
you know,
awesome.
Marley's is a sponsor of our
well,
show.
They're
here.
We're
very
excited
about.
We love Marley's. AJ and Dan are good friends of mine both, and
right.
I love them. Dear.
So if people for some reason they'd been to your place like 10 times in a row, they could go over to Marley.
They could go there during and go get hammered and come back later.
That's true. They got plenty of time.
They could take the love
there.
Train over there.
You're right. They got plenty of time.
They could waddle over.
Yeah, what's the light rail done for you guys? I mean, how's that changed the
love train? Is that what you call it?
Yeah.
Oh, hilarious.
How does that change your reality downtown?
My reality? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, what about your reality?
You know what? I probably became so jaded to it, you know, during the process.
Right.
I mean, it was such a... you know, a black hole, you know, literally. I mean, where it was like, you know, I watched guys drink coffee for 2 years and stare at a hole.
Oh, really?
And, yeah.
Those union jobs.
Yeah, it was pretty. I mean,
turns to run
it was, it was. But I mean, in the end, it's a pretty neat thing. I like to see the hours extended and like.
Yes.
They're going to do that apparently over the summer.
Yeah, I mean, so I think that would be the biggest thing.
Why weren't they doing it already?
Well, I think
that's
so
dumb.
I mean, like when the people are out getting DUIs and getting hammered. I mean,
they're closed.
They're closed.
Right.
So people are running
genius.
to the. I'm sure the sprained ankles are way up because people sprinting for the light rail.
Yeah,
right.
It's ridiculous.
Last call for the train.
A lot of rehab. A lot of.
So now apparently beginning in June or something, they're going to start operating till 2:30 in the morning, which would be great.
Yeah. They ought to.
But I think it's a neat thing to. Yeah. It is. It's neat.
It's neat now.
Is it?
Yeah, you didn't like it before. Disrupted business.
Yeah, it was just, you know, it was just, I just think there wasn't enough. I think they had a lot of opportunity to kind of build a relationship with it. And it just like was this big hole that, that made people so angry. And then it was like, no, there's Love Fest. That the light rail's open. Here's a free T-shirt. And it was just like, I think they had a great opportunity.
Was that a little frustrating when you see it disrupting all these businesses and then you look out and you see five guys drinking coffee, you stared at the hole?
Yeah, dude, it does make it. You know, I mean, and again, it could be my own ignorance because, you know, as most things, I just don't understand. You know,
well, you got to check those holes out.
Maybe it was me.
You know, it could
maybe it just looked like 10 guys.
It probably was me. My, you know, my grandfather was a union.
Nothing wrong with
crane operator. No, crane operator, and he loved the coffee break too. But
did you know I was in the operators union here in Arizona?
Really?
As a member of the operators.
Telephone
union.
Operators.
No, I don't think they were in there. It was operate equipment. And I had to, my job on the construction site, why I had to join that, I was in the labor union.
So was I.
And the operators union I had to join because I operated the construction elevator, which went from the bottom floor to the 10th floor. And it's the old Doubletree on 2nd Avenue in Osborne. And it was very funny because there was an up and a down. Those are the two buttons. Okay, up and down. That was it. Okay,
yeah.
I had to get there at 5. You know, and I came from Mesa. There, this is a year after I graduated from high school, and the elevator guys don't get there until 6, but a lot of other people got there at 5, and you had to take them. Well, the only trick of this deal, there were two tricks. One was you had to see where, you know, make it level so people didn't trip on the way out. Level with the floor. So when you go to 4, make sure you're level with floor number 4. Okay, I could do that. And the other thing was, don't overshoot floor 10. Okay? Because there were only 10. That's the top. And if you overshot it, it would stick. Okay? And then the elevator guys have to come up the stairs, and they're real grouchy. They don't like that. And everyone else is pissed because they're waiting for the elevator and everything. So, of course, I'm on the job about a week. And I'm like half asleep. It's 5 a.m. I'm 18 years old. And I'm like, da 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 da. Oh! I hit the down. And then I hear from 10 floors down, Woods, get that fucking elevator down. Get that elevator down here, you ass. And I'm on and on. They're screaming. I had to walk down 10 flights to tell a crowd of angry carpenters. No. You're going to have to carry your stuff up the stairs.
Sorry.
That was not good. I botched my operators.
I was in the labor's union every summer in college.
Yeah, me too.
My uncle was a big union guy. Mm-hmm. And so he got me in. And
yeah, yeah. It's popular, isn't it?
Oh, dude, in 70...
Is it hard to get in?
Oh, yeah. And in 76...
It is hard, and you're taking someone else's spot.
I was making $14 an hour in 1976.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, me too.
So the first... I got in trouble.
That's
my
why
first,
we did it.
My first coffee break... They pulled me aside and said, your uncle's got to talk to you. And I went up and I said, Gary, what's wrong, man? I was. Mm-hmm. He goes, you're working too hard. He goes, you're getting too much shit done. Oh, so here's what you're going to do.
I didn't have that problem.
He goes, and I wasn't. Mm-hmm. But and I was,
they really told you
I was employee of the morning.
Wow.
And he said, here's what you're going to do. If you work too hard, then we're going to expect that.
Right,
the other labor. So get your stuff done and then go hide. And every day I would work hard from about 8 to 10, and then we'd take coffee break, and I would go hide, and I would sleep in the back of a cement mixer for like 4 hours.
No way.
This is how we build America. This is good stuff.
Yeah,
this is
nice.
Good stuff right here.
That's exactly.
That's horrible. Yeah.
And that's why.
That
you know,
is
it's
so
like,
funny. I had the exact opposite experience. The guy calls me in, and he says, well, you know, same thing. I got in there because my dad is a big construction guy. And so I did it for a few days, you know, and I was doing my best, I thought. And guy calls me in, the labor foreman, he goes, hey, here's the thing. because, you know, you kind of got put in this job here. If you see a guy carrying a door, you carry two doors. You see a guy digging a hole there, you dig twice as fast. And I'm like, there is no fucking way that's going to happen. I can't carry one door. I'm like, can I have some
you
help?
You were Ernie Douglas.
No, I was grown by then. Okay. I was bigger by then. But these guys are big guys. And he's like, oh, you carry two. I'm sure. So every summer for me, it was, I swear to God, this happened. I did it 3 summers. I'd start out doing everything. Jackhammer. You ever use one of those?
Oh yeah.
They took that away from me because it was not pretty. It's a cartoon guy. I'm all over the place. Yeah, a guy with a bad back. The only reason he let me do it because his back was screwed up. I did it for about a minute, and he went, "Okay, screw my back. I can't watch this.
I'll take
okay,
it."
Yeah. They by the end of the summer, all three summers, I was sweeping. And that's what I did all day. 8 hours of sweeping. Yeah. Talk about boring.
Yeah, but at $14 an hour, right?
They called me a college boy.
It was boring.
They called me college boy.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Oh. Did they ask you what went on to college?
Oh, no, yeah. And here was the best. By the end of this thing, because they thought I was some genius, yeah. But I'm just a moron.
Exactly.
Now I'm telling jokes for a living.
You have no idea. Exactly.
By the end of the summer, they'd be... Remember Dufresne and Shawshank, how he was doing all their financial planning for
right,
me?
Right.
They called me over. So, what's this I before E? You know, they'd be asking me, you know, saying that kind
God.
Of stuff.
Oh, my God. No, how about the...
I was the genius compared to
my guys, they were fascinated by... They had this image of college because they hadn't gone to college, and that it was like some... And, you know, it was in the 70s. Like, this was like, you know, sex-a-rama college. I mean, they were like...
So they were right.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, it had... I guess they were, actually, now that I think about it. But guys would come up to you, like, you know... You start the summer, new job and everything, and inevitably they go, hey, you know, some the main guys would be like the first day, hey, you go to that college over there, Los Angeles, yeah, a lot of pussy over there. Okay, whatever, you know, and so this would go on and on. Now I'm on the job. This is my third summer, and there is a guy who is from our church. Who was like an elder in the church or whatever, you know, whatever they are. And I'd known this guy growing up. I grew up with one of his kids, you know. And he's on the job. And so everyone else, same old shit. And we get a couple months into the summer, dying, 190 out there, you know, just awful. And he comes up to me and I goes, hey, how you doing? And everything going okay? Yeah. You go to that college. And I go, oh, no, please, please don't say it. In my mind, I'm going, don't say it. He's yeah, a lot of pussy over there. Okay. Oh, his wife was like taught me, and I'm going, my God. Yes, there is. Put a
every day, twice a day.
Put it on the bulletin board.
Half the students have one.
He just wanted to know. He needed to know.
He needed to know. Yeah, that's a whole different world there. Yeah. I don't know if this ever happened to you. One day I tried to, my first year, this is when this happened to me, my first summer. So I'm trying to just stay out of the way here, right? And one day they got in a huge argument at lunch. This is about a weekend. They were like yelling at each other. People were pissed. They're, hey, chef, screw you. Hey, fuck out. And I started laughing. Like, what's so funny? And, well, what was funny was their argument. And their argument, which they were almost ready to come to blows over, was... If Jesus were alive today, would he be a union carpenter?
Oh, my God.
See, that's a good bumper sticker right there. So.
Yeah. And half of them, oh, by God, he would, because he's a union guy. Like, oh, my God, whatever, you know. Anyway.
That's good. See, that's good
okay,
stuff.
Can we do the, okay, let's finish off with this Woody here.
God left. And, it's about time.
And then we will be done. Oh, hey, there we go.
That's sweet.
We're going to hear it twice.
That's good stuff.
So good.
In honor of Nathan and Robert Robb. That's right. All right, today's Woody goes to the pride of Montana, Eric Sly. Oh, yeah, here. You want to hold the Woody?
Please.
Thank you. Well, Eric Sly was called to jury duty in district court in... kill the Woody.
That's harsh. Don't kill it, just put it down for
yes,
a while.
Yes, ice it. Okay. Eric Sly was called to jury duty in district court in Gallatin County, Montana, earlier this year. He didn't want to serve. That's not so unusual. What is unusual is what he wrote in the potential juror form to try to get out of serving. Suffice it to say that Judge John Brown was not happy. Here is what the inaptly named Eric Sly wrote to the judge. Quote, apparently you morons didn't understand me the first time. I cannot take time off from work. I'm not putting my family's well-being at stake to participate in this case. Okay, so far not too bad. I don't believe in the justice system, and I don't want to have a goddamn thing to do with it. Okay, a little strong there.
Strong.
Swearing, generally frowned upon by the judges. He goes on. Jury duty is a complete waste of time. I would rather count the wrinkles on my dog's balls than sit on a jury.
No, he did not.
I didn't know that was the option.
Yes.
Yeah. Didn't really look that close.
Get it through your thick skulls. Leave me the fuck alone.
Wow.
That's yes. Woody.
Yeah, that's not good. That's not only did Eric write this nice note, he had it notarized and sent to the judge. The judge hauled him in under the threat of a contempt citation, but let him off with a stern talking to. Too bad. A good sentence would have been to actually have him be forced. No, force him to count the wrinkles on his dog's balls.
Yeah, yeah.
However you do that. It's quite an image, anyway, that Eric gave us. Thanks for that, Eric. You get a Woody. And if you want to see that actual jury note,
it's on the website.
It's on the website. Check
Eric,
it out.
Yeah,
in Eric's own handwriting. What a goof. Yeah, I mean, he had it notarized. He's like, this
he
is his
far.
Official deal. Unbelievable. Okay, anyone there, anything else you want to throw in? Are you guys reading? I want to just say one last thing here because we are over. So, are you reading the little thing in the newspaper? They're having a big exposé of a local televangelist named Don Stewart.
I've got today's still sitting there.
I saw him on the news last night.
Oh, did you see him? What do you think?
Wow, he's kind of scary.
Yeah, very.
Makes very you long much. For Jimmy Swaggart.
Oh, my God.
Maybe
you know
a
what?
Televangelist who isn't scary.
No, he. You know what's odd? You're exactly right. If you read it in the paper, and it's like a four or five-day series, I mean, they're creaming this guy, but it doesn't do justice to seeing him in person. You know. And by the way, I recognized him because I see him down there. He is either in the first or second row at Suns games.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's most of
that tells you.
Yeah, it's for the most of the televangelists.
Yeah, and his shows are on BET. Okay, he's a white guy, but he's on Black Entertainment Network selling these prayer cloths for $10. You know, and you know it's pretty unbelievable deal.
They're like ShamWows, I think. Like
yeah, they are. Wow. Yeah. Sham is the correct word
right,
there.
Correct.
And I'll just pass along here. My view on these folks, and that is, and I really feel strongly about this, I don't believe in the Ten Commandments where it says, shalt not take the name of the Lord in vain. I don't think it means God damn it. I don't think you're going to hell for saying that. If you are, I mean, pretty much everyone's gone. I mean, if that's the standard.
Company will be good.
It's over. I don't think that's what it means. I think it means televangelist. These kind of guys who prey upon people in the name of religion, take their money from them, and exploit them in this way. Those are the guys who are going to take a direct, you know, down
I'd
there.
Buy that,
so
yeah.
I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Taking that Grant Woods elevator ride down.
Down. Yeah, that's right.
No 10th floor for those people.
That's right. They're going to the bottom there. So anyway, pretty great work by the Arizona Republican checking this out. Now, I will say, I know the folks who are representing this guy because he called me and I referred them to him or him to them. And they think he's a you know he's an all right guy and all that. So in his defense, he does have some people on his side. So you ought to read that if you haven't checked it out. It's also on Channel 12 every night because they're a partner with the Arizona Republic. Okay.
He should have gone to Phillips and Associates.
Oh, those guys. Yeah.
We already talked about that.
We're going to follow that. Oh,
yeah.
Did you ever get a call from your old boyfriend?
No.
No.
No. There's nowhere to find me.
Hey, real quick. I know we're way over. Spectre, are you? I heard.
Oh yeah, that was on one of our topics we didn't get to.
But I heard that the Republicans did get Phil Spector.
Just going to say Arlen or Phil.
Yeah.
You know what? I lost it for Spector years ago. I wanted him to run as Bush's running mate.
Yeah. Okay.
Just for the name, you know, like Clinton and Gore.
Mm-hmm. Bush and Spector.
Yeah.
The Bush and Spector.
Yeah. Now come on, tell me that wouldn't have gotten votes.
Bush and Spector.
Bush and Spector.
Yes.
Every college kid would have voted for that.
That's true.
Yes. He called me in 96. Our own Spector called me on the phone and asked me if I would chair his campaign for presidency in Arizona. And I passed because I didn't think he could win.
Did you tell him that?
I said, I'll get back to you on that.
Oh,
busy.
You didn't.
No, I don't know what I told him. I got out of it.
Yeah.
Because I supported Dole, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
Which was unpopular enough in Arizona at that time. But, yeah, well, you know, Spector, he's kind of a mercenary there. I don't know how much it's about principle. It doesn't sound too much like principle. It sounds like he did some polling and he couldn't win, and he's 100 years old, and these guys never want to leave. So that's too bad, really. But the Republicans, they're going to have to wake up at some point in time and actually nominate people who can win. Otherwise, they've gone from, you know.
So far, they don't have anyone.
Well, they're down to 40 in the Senate and falling fast, you know.
Yeah.
But they had a big meeting over the weekend. They're going to have a whole new image for the Republican Party. Mm. And the people who walked out of the meeting speaking for the new Republican Party were Mitt Romney and Eric Cantor. Wow, that'll take off.
That. Then the meeting was at Men's Warehouse.
Yeah, on a much more self-serving question.
Yes,
Chris, I've not been to your place, and I know it's the best.
It's overrated.
I'll take you.
Can he get in?
Where I live, I got to take a Southwest flight to get there.
You just take the light rail. We'll get you there.
But if I come in, what should I get? What's the special? What's the one thing that
you know? They're like puppies, man. They're all cute and they're all special in their own way.
They are special,
man. You know what?
I heard that margarita pizza.
Margarita is good. It's a good place to start. It's friendly and neutral and
sunny boy. Gotta get a sunny boy.
If I want to go down there for like a day, are you only at night?
Just night, 5 to 10, and then we serve till we get. You know, everybody
so if I want to eat at 6, what, stop in for like a 12 o'clock Diamondback game, put my order in?
Yeah.
Well, there's a wait for a reason.
There's a wait.
Right? Hey,
that's pretty crazy.
Who's the one who rated you number one in the United States?
Oprah.
New York Times.
New York Times, okay. How about this? New York Times. Well, let's just stick with them. New York Times, the entire country, and of course the East Coast goes insane, especially
right.
New York. They're from
Not
New York.
Somebody in New York.
And they pick Phoenix, Arizona. Yeah. And Pizzeria.
But it's, you know, I'll say it's subjective anyway.
Well, obviously,
no,
but
no,
hey.
It's not. He does like 5 things, and he does them better than anybody else on the planet.
Absolutely. That's fantastic.
Wow. He doesn't go try to do crazy
do
stuff.
Really
you go in
well.
There, you get what you get. It is
what
the
is
best
that?
Pizza you'll ever get.
Oh, this show?
No.
Oh, it's not this. I thought it was.
It involves a lot of hand kneading.
Well, I think that's a show. What do you think?
That's a show.
Is that a show? All right. Chris?
That's good time. Well, thank you very much.
All right.
For having
thanks for being here, man.
Be here.
Hopefully you'll be back.
Thank you. I will be.
All right. That's a show.
All right. Cool. Thank you, guys.